Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people in the cheap seats, people in the VIP seats, it's time for the Slacker End of Year Awards. As if we need more lists and more awards, but look, here we are. And I couldn't think of anything even more clever to do at the end of the year. So I've lumped in two incredible journalists. I've got Roisin O'Connor, who is the music correspondent at The Independent.
Hello.
I really don't want to fuck this up. And Sam Wilson, who's told me just to call himself a journalist.
I mean, that's all I am now. I've got no badges.
You're a man with no country.
I'm a man with no country.
Roving through the literary world.
I've literally been in this corner of this room for months now, just waiting for a podcast to happen.
So we're here to do the Slacker End of Year Awards. And I was trying to think of maybe a top 10 of what we could do and talk about, but I'm not really that organized at all. So I kind of just got you all to pick your favorite stories of 2018 and we'll make up suitable awards for them. And I'm like,
I thought you were going to ask me about my first demo.
Oh yeah, I was. Are you sure you don't want me to?
I've got so much to talk about.
I mean, with journalists, it would be your first article, right?
As in the first one we ever wrote.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh God, I can't remember. Ages ago.
I wrote one for a magazine and I didn't get it published because it was too scathing. Because I wrote it drunk after the gig that I was at.
Who was it about?
Oh, I can't even remember. It was a local band. It was really. So the Slacker End of Year Awards. Who wants to start? I'll tell you what, right? Because this is a crazy cooked up scheme that I still have no idea what it's going to be, but we'll figure it out as we go along. I'm going to start with the Steve Jobs Award to Outstanding Bullshitting in Claiming That They Invented the iPhone Award.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, go on.
That's a pretty niche one. It's not one of those awards where we can go, and here are the nominees. Moby claimed to have invented the iPhone.
Did he?
Yeah.
When was that?
I think he said he invented it many, many years. Just when they brought in out the iPod for the first time, Moby was sort of called in. I don't know if it was a consultant or maybe Steve Jobs was a fan of Moby's. Mm. But he was called in and Moby said, in a couple of years' time, it's going to have a phone and it's going to have a camera and it's going to have the rest. And I think the people at Apple laughed him out of the room and were just no, this will never be able to happen. We will never be able to put that on the iPod. So Moby, in sense, thinks that because of that, he invented the iPhone. I don't know if he goes around telling everybody going,
I mean, it's not like he built it, though.
That's mine, that is.
He didn't build it. It's like Bowie predicting the internet. They just knew it was going to happen. You can't say you invented something if you didn't make it.
I think he's projecting, because have you heard that very good podcast, Heavyweight, where in one of the episodes, someone who basically invented Moby, who was a friend of Moby's and gave him the box of CDs with all the samples that were on play that made him a multi-millionaire. He gave him all, because he used lots of old spirituals and stuff, and he gave him this super, super rare box set of CDs. And Moby never thanked him or never gave the CDs back. And the next thing he knows, he's listening to them being played to.
Aww.
So I feel like Moby, having stolen his career, is now feeling a bit he wants in on the... you've got to go one up,
that's
famously.
Artistic karma,
yeah.
Isn't it?
It's
somebody gave him his career. So he saw that Apple were struggling with the iPod and he decided, guys, iPhone, there it is, in the paw. Who wants to go next, Roisin? You've got one.
Bell End of the Year, for me.
Oh, there would be so many nominees.
There's so many nominees. This is the one we could run through. I feel like we should run through potentials and then I'll say what my winner is.
Okay, yeah.
So, Sam?
What, for Bell End of the Year?
Who do you want to nominate?
Is this musicians or just people I know? Because I've got a lot in the second category.
We'll stick to musicians.
Who's been particularly awful this year? Goodness, I struggle to think. What's been terrible? I need some reminding.
Been some beef in hip hop.
Oh yeah, I know, but I don't think anyone came off particularly badly from those fights, did they? That was good fun, I thought. The Pusha T, Drake stuff. I was on everyone's side there.
Yeah, yeah. I was on hip hop side. I just like the idea of everybody creating a moment where they're just beefing for the sake of numbers, really.
Sort of drifting into my other award now.
Okay. Well, no, what's
your Bell End of the Year?
My Bell End of the Year is Eminem. For several reasons.
Go on.
Well, he dropped a surprise album in 2018, which I have no time for.
The surprise albums are off?
Yeah, it's just so old. And I kind of I'm kind of enjoying the slow build of looking towards an album now. Like, Arctics was too long. I think the 1975 was too long. I don't know who's the right amount of time to draw out an album. But Eminem just doing a surprise thing was no.
Is it because you're easily shocked and you're like, oh,
I think
it's still my beating heart. There's an Eminem album.
I wake up at 5 a.m. and I see that he's done it, and I'm like, oh fuck's sake, I'm gonna have to write about this all day now. I've got no time to listen to it properly. And then the album wasn't very good, and then he decided that it's still okay to use homophobic slurs in 2018, which obviously isn't.
No.
And how old is he? 47.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, mate, find a new insult, you know?
Yeah.
Find some better vocabulary.
Somebody who's got such a daft use of lexicon and got a pretty decent vocabulary. But do you think he's trying to use those words because it gives him street cred? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe he'd been out of the game for a little bit and he thought...
it gives you the opposite.
This is still cool to say this for shock factor.
No,
it's not. No one else is doing it anymore because they realise that it's massively offensive. It's
fucking awful, yeah.
Yeah, so it was that. And then he did the worst 11-minute freestyle that I've ever heard in my life. Did you guys watch that?
Yes, I did see that.
It was like watching your granddad try and rap. It was just... all I can think of when I see him freestyle now is that guy that did that viral video where he mimicked Eminem.
And it was I've seen that.
Napkin.
I'm going to put a link to that video in the description of this podcast, because once you watch that freestyle video, it's very hard to actually just watch freestyle videos, period, after that.
Yeah, it's very, very bad. I will say, devil's avocado, but I do think that because we're used to, this is the first generation of aging rap stars. And so we're kind of in this new space where rap stars are really cool, but then people over 45 are really lame and we don't quite know where they fit in. Because you don't expect Rick Astley to still be coming out with the heavy hitters. In other genres, once people hit past their creative peak, sometimes people carry on making amazing stuff, but it's fine also if they just sort of go off the boil and make sort of worse and worse music to an ever smaller audience. But with rappers, it doesn't feel right, and we don't understand quite what to do with that yet.
I think we're so used to aging rock stars that the idea of having the Rolling Stones up on stage with a combined age of 5,946 seems perfectly reasonable, headline and Glastonbury, but because you're right, we're not used to having people shell down at 75, do you know?
I would argue with rappers. I mean, there have been some good kind of oldies hip-hop releases this year. I fucking love the Cypress Hill record. I think that's amazing. Guys like Q-Tip and that lot are still doing amazing work. It's more the content of Eminem stuff. It's you're still slagging off Christina Aguilera and Ariana Grande and then pretending that Slim Shady is still a character, but it's you can't differentiate. If you're talking about real people and about strangling women in one rap and then being no, it's not me, it's my character, I just think that's bullshit.
I hear that.
This is why he wins my award for Bell End of the Year.
He's not coming on this podcast after this, I'll tell you that, am I? Sam, who's your first slacker award to?
I would like to give the Monica from Friends when she goes to a beginner's cookery class so that she feels better about a bad review she got award to... Do you need me to do that again?
I think I probably might need to get that one again. Hold on. I'll give you the proper going, right?
Right.
And here we have Sam Wilson with the...
When Monica from Friends goes to a beginner's cookery class so that she feels better about a bad review she got award. And it was a tough category this year, but I'm awarding it to Jessie J, who... maybe not everyone knows this, but Jessie J, who obviously left the UK in a kind of harumph a couple of years ago and said she's not appreciated here and people don't understand her artistry, ignoring the fact that everyone just thinks she's a bit of a twat, then went to the US and said, I'm going to go to America and be I'm going to do things there. And then when that didn't work out, her new move was to go and enter a reality singing competition in China, which she then won.
Congratulations. Well done.
And she was very good on it.
Yeah.
But to be fair, she was already a rather established star. And quite bizarrely, when other contestants on the show sang covers of other people's songs, she would sing her own song.
What, that already had like international
acclaim?
Yeah,
yeah, like honestly, someone would do like whatever, Purple Rain, and then she'd come on and do Bang Bang. And it was just, yeah. it was a very strange thing. And she became increasingly defensive.
Was it successful though? Because like, it's a pretty big market
it's
to like-
huge market.
Bring your music to that mightn't have known about it before.
No, I'm-
It actually kind of might be a genius move.
It's potentially very shrewd, but I do think that I think to do it without any humility and sort of say, you know, this is just a great new venture for me, and not recognize that, you know, once you've found global success, it's a bit weird to go back to a competition. And it's just so her, isn't it, to sort of seek out praise from anywhere. It doesn't matter if it's like when you're, I mean, and I'm being slightly unfair because I think the other people on the show have had success in China, some of them,
yeah.
But they're not singing their own songs like she is.
It is a little bit sort of strange, isn't it? It's like when the people in China in that market is not buying her records anymore, does that mean that she goes to Australasia, or she goes to like a new market every couple of years?
But is she like famous in China now from doing that show? Because I don't think she is.
She definitely won it, and she was very popular, and the show was huge. I don't know how her subsequent record sales, like, but I imagine it's she's doing all right now.
Was there something to do with the cooking show in there as well?
Oh yeah, she's got some. She's got what? Does she have her own cooking show?
Does she?
No. I
when
think
you're talking about the Monica
Jessie...
episode.
Ah, right.
That's
right,
Monica
right.
has a cooking
right.
show.
Sorry, yeah. So to explain the...
we should have explained that at the beginning.
allegory. There's an episode of Friends where Monica gets a bad restaurant review and she goes to a beginner's cookery class so that she feels better about herself. And the chef is going, oh, Monica, you're so good at this. And she's like, ugh, I just made it up. And it's, I mean, that's very much the Jessie J thing, isn't it? Everyone hates her so much.
This is clearly the nichest award of the... I mean, we've only just started, but I have
no,
to
no,
say
I think
that
it's definitely
be,
the nichest award.
It has to be the nichest award. So, like, I'm giving
like
you...
Like the Oscars, I'm trying to spice it up. You know, new categories. We've got to reinvent the format.
Okay, right. Here's one for you. This band robbed my house award.
Interesting.
Do you know who this is before I start?
Oh, I think I might know who it is.
A celebrity from the 90s has exclaimed that a very popular Britpop band came round and robbed his house.
This was Oasis.
Yes, it was.
I feel like I won a competition.
And the celebrity was Richard Madeley off of Richard and Judy.
Oh, really?
They used to rob houses, apparently, when they were little kids running around in Manchester.
Yeah, apparently so.
And then Liam apologised.
Yeah, according to Richard Madeley, this is his quote. He says, him and his brother used to live quite close to us when we used to live in Manchester. Madeley said, and they admittedly, in the early stages of their career, they did a little bit of robbery, a little bit of burglary, and we think they did our house. I spoke to them about it, and we spoke about it and many years ago, and they said, yeah, I think we did that one. We went in through the window, yeah. Now, the Gallagher brothers have both come out and said since that they haven't robbed Richard Madeley's house, but... I mean, they said they did at one stage, and now they're saying they didn't.
Sorry, just to be clear, who robbed Richard? They robbed Richard Madeley.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
But Liam, like, after he came out with it, was it earlier this year?
Mm-hmm.
Liam then tweeted and was like, sorry, mate, or something.
It's interesting because, you know, the major scandal of Richard Madeley's life is, you know about this, that he... I'm careful legally here. He left a shop with... think something in his pockets that he claims he forgot about, and the shop weren't having it, and he stole, and he got charged, he was convicted of theft. And I wonder now if, you know, and he to this day says that he wasn't aware that he had the thing in his pocket, but maybe again processing being robbed as a youth, he's kind of become a bit of a kleptomaniac.
I would definitely go as far to say that this is all very much alleged.
I'm pretty sure he was charged, you can look it up,
but like imagine that he was in the station, right, and they were questioning him about the Twix that was in his pocket.
Right,
and they're like, oi Madeley, we're gonna have you, you're going down for this, Judy's not here to save you now.
What police do you know?
I don't know that many police, but do you think that he ratted on the Oasis to get his time down a little bit. He was like a snitch.
Maybe in the psychological.
Well, they arranged
interview.
A deal all those years ago. Like, if you tell us who robbed your house.
Yeah, exactly. You'll get some time off. He was cleared of it.
We apologize for implying.
So at this stage of the podcast, after doing a little bit of research, we've realized that he walked out of a shop with some washing powder and he's been cleared of it.
Okay, fine. But it was still a very traumatic experience for it. He talked about it for about 20 minutes on Piers Morgan's Life Stories. It was basically the whole interview. It really hit him.
How did I miss that? Anyway, like, congratulations to the Oasis brothers for not doing that, because they said they didn't.
So basically, no one robbed anyone.
Yeah.
Wink.
Well, that's definitely one of the worst words. That one didn't even happen. Roshi, what you got?
My next one. Oh, God, I'm going to do my fucking Trooper of the Year award, which is for Ariana Grande. And this is maybe like a nicer one. I'm not calling anyone a Belen now. I just think she's been pretty amazing for the last 2 years. So maybe this is like a 2 year award.
I don't think I've seen many pop stars in the public eye have to go through as much stuff as she did, starting with obviously the massive tragedy that there was in Manchester.
Yeah, it was that. And then everyone, or not everyone, I'm going to say, was it Piers Morgan? Was it Dick? Like, she went back to the US the next day to just be with family and, like, you know, recover, obviously, because you're, what, 24? And something like that happens to you. And then Piers Morgan was like, why isn't she with the victims and all this shit? Mm. And it's just, it was that. And then she did, then she broke up with Mac. And then Pete Davidson split up from him. Then obviously Mac Miller passed away. And she just dealt with all of it in the public eye. And then, you know, released the biggest selling single of her career so far. So I think that's a pretty good year.
I mean, like, as years go, that's the ultimate roller coaster there, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah, when I say good year, by the way, I mean like,
yeah, like she,
good for her for being so amazing.
Yeah,
about
yeah,
it.
No, exactly. I mean, like, isn't she like the most? I think like she's the most streamed artist on Spotify at the moment, which is like crazy. She's taken over like Drake and Selena Gomez, and like in that time, she probably deserves a bit of a, you know, a week off.
Yeah,
we're giving her an award.
Yeah, she's got the award.
No, but
I hope
do,
this makes her happy.
I mean, I think also it's just so. Not that she is an artist for children, and I think she's really, you know, proven that this year, but having seen her a lot in the past and sort of, I mean, the first time I saw her, I just remember being surrounded literally by sort of under nines. And I just thought, you know, considering what she's such an inspirational and very smart and very like switched on person with a lot to say, and it just, they're so lucky to have a pop star like that. You know, to grow up for that to be your idol when you're 9 years old, you know, I had Steps and
yeah,
it just wasn't the same.
Are you not saying that Steps like treated you in the same sort of way? They didn't teach you life lessons that,
you know, like the one thing that really sticks out to me about Ariana is a time when she was still with Mac Miller and a guy came up to them and was like he's kind of, oh, Mac, can't believe you got her on your arm. Well done for hitting that, and kind of gave him a high five. And she did this like long post that was just so kind of astute. And she basically said, like, women are not objects, we are queens. Like, don't fucking, I love my boyfriend, but don't come up to me and say I'm something on his arm. And I just thought you'd never get that from Faye Tozer. And so that was a Steps reference. That was maybe too niche. I should have gone for a Lisa Scott Lee.
Thanks for clarifying.
I was so lost there.
But I think, yeah, I think she's incredible. And on top of all of those things that you said, I just think that No Tears Left to Cry is a kind of ray of light, Madonna-esque level, like incredible emotional pop song that is really, to my mind, the hands down song of the year. So I feel like she's had a very good year. I mean, you know, like 3 years ago, her big news story was that she licked a donut.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
So I feel what? Like in terms of news story,
you must know
this.
No, I've never heard that story.
Was it a video or was it a picture?
She was in a donut shop and CCTV later revealed that while the server had gone to get her what she'd ordered, she picked a donut off the counter and licked it.
I mean, like,
it was a huge scandal.
Have you ever been at a Pick-a-Mix and just stuck your hand in and just eaten one and just decided to say nothing about it.
Eaten is very different from licking and putting it back.
Licking and putting it back is like a different story. Although I don't think any of her fans would complain. But it was just this
it
massive
was very
thing.
Funny.
People would
it was
pay like, a lot of money for that donut.
It was on like the front pages of tabloids and stuff. The number of people freaking out about this video.
Well, she now is statistically the queen, the king, the overarching
boss of streaming.
Boss of streaming, yeah. And she's come through all of the hardships to get there as well. So yeah, no, I like that award.
Yeah.
Sam.
Oh, my awards. I've got them ready, don't worry. Well, I thought that maybe, again, this is one that we could all contribute to, but what has been, you know, I wanted to give an award to the worst piece of music-branded content that you've seen this year.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I've got some nominations in mind, but please, I was kind of struggling to think. One that came to mind was, do you see Converse had a big campaign where the campaign was rated 1 star and they spent a lot of money. And I think Zayn Malik was one and maybe Rita or someone.
When you say it was rated 1 star.
Because Converse has
Converse has one star,
logo.
Right?
Right, yeah.
But, so what they had was huge billboards all over Britain that said, Zayn Malik rated 1 star. And then they had a 1 star out of 5 thing over the top of him.
Congratulations. Well done, Zayn. Yeah. You did it.
It's one of those things where like he must have done it, you know, taken the money and then been like, actually, was this worth the money? So that was one. The Dua Lipa and Jaguar, I just want to give a quick shout out to, not because it was an especially bad one, but just because she would constantly tweet about how excited she was to be doing it in a way that felt so false. I feel like you have to have a bit of kind of like whatever. She was just like, this is the highlight of my career so far. She made a car which you could like control with your phone. You know, like all these things are a death of 1,000 bad meeting ideas.
I bet she can't drive.
Yeah, I mean, it's all of that.
But that's the famous one, isn't it? Like the really old school version of that was like, do you remember Noel Gallagher when they go back to the Gallagher brothers? When like pop stars used to make loads and loads of money, he bought a brown Rolls Royce and then couldn't drive it because he couldn't drive.
That's
pops, but pop stars get free cars when they do stuff like that. And when you see them like rolling about in their free cars, I was always like, wow, I can't believe they're like, they don't own it. They only get it for a couple of months, don't they? And then they have to give it back.
I know a pop star who got a car for doing a car thing, and she still has it to this day. I won't name names.
Okay, fair enough. The worst piece of branded content of all time. I know this is the 2018 version, but like the worst one of all time is obviously the Clean Bandit Cortana one.
Oh,
classic of the genre.
Yeah,
just cringe.
But again, with there, I liked it because you could see that they'd been pushed into a situation that then they were kind of out of their control, and it's terrible. But it's sort of brilliant in its awfulness. But then they weren't then claiming it was amazing. They owned up to the fact.
Yeah, you know, no, fair enough.
Have you seen the Scrabble one that came out this year? This is, as you can tell, it's a real thing of mine.
Can I guess what pop star was fronting up Scrabble?
You won't. The Scrabble one, they went really trendy. Okay?
Okay.
So they went like Chicken Shop Date, Lottie Anderson, Jimothy, like all these like very trendy people playing Scrabble in a
it's very, very London.
It's very London.
Jimothy Lacoste.
Yeah.
The lady from Chicken Shop Date.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a real bid to hit London influencers.
Hit the Ute?
And it's...
Is Ute actually a word in Y-U-T-E in Scrabble?
There was a lot of that kind of conversation in the bit of...
Is that the banter?
Yeah.
Don't they spell it Y-O-U-T now?
Hey?
Don't they spell it Y-O-U-T now?
What do I know? Like, I want to give an award now to the island of Ireland.
Oh yeah, heard of it.
I'm playing to type here.
Mm.
I want to give Ireland really starting the fucking Neil Hip Hop Award.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Because like, my God, the hip hop in Ireland.
It's blowing up.
It's blowing up now, but I swear to God, I've been into hip hop since I was about maybe 15, 16 years old, and we have not had a lot to shout about. We've had a lot of sort of pretenders and a lot of people shouting real nasty shit.
And there's some quite infamous examples of like wannabe Irish hip hop stars from the last 10 years.
I think the biggest hip hop record to ever come out of Ireland was House of Pain. You know, like, remember House of Pain?
Oh yeah, it's a classic.
Yeah. But like, I think those guys aren't even actually Irish. I think they've got like Irish parents or something like that. But this year it's been incredible. We've had rappers like Kojak come out. Obviously Reggie Snow finally put out his album that he's been threatening to put out for a long time. And there's been a whole like R&B revolution as well, with Super Silly and like tons and tons and tons of amazing artists.
Kosh is Irish, right?
Kosh is Irish, yeah.
I love her. Formerly Bonsai.
Big time. And yeah, it's just been great to see, because, and they're starting to actually like fight with the, or be up there with the UK artists that have been doing it for quite a long time. And it's been threatening to happen for a while, but like, finally I can be proud of just going, oh, there's some class music from Ireland, and it's not just a load of indie boys.
I've had a very similar experience this year where, you know, there's a lot of grime and sort of drill songs about repping your ends, so to speak. And obviously the big hit this year has been Homet and B by Unknown T, which is an incredible track.
This is debut track as well.
It's insane.
How are you going to follow that, mate?
It's just ridiculous.
I hope he does, because that song's so good.
But for me, from the tough streets of Crouch End, there's never really been a song repping my ends until a man called Rhys West dropped a track called W7, which is about the bus route that goes from Muswell Hill
I've been on that bus
down through Crouch End along to Stroud Green and then terminates at Finchley Park. It's sort of like a shuttle service for people in that Hornsey area. I've spent probably more days of my life on it than not on it. And he dropped this track on it, and it's all about how he's, you know, W7, we still got W7, still selling lemon on the W7. It's incredible. And I've struck up a bit of a sort of Twitter friendship with him over it, because it's...
Is it genuinely actually quite good, or do you just
like
it's
really
because
good. No, it is really good.
It talks about a bus that you know?
No, I mean, it is really good, but it's also just you know, it's the similar feeling. You know, the Irish hip-hop you're talking about is great, but it also gives you a sense of local pride. And when you see him in the video and the bus is just sort of pulling past the Waitrose, I'm like, yeah, my end.
Are you allowed to have local pride when you're in London and everybody loves London things anyway? Is local pride not like a little bit more... It's a little bit more romantic when it's like the Isle of Sheppey, or it's like the Isle of Man or something.
I don't know what the things you just said are.
I mean, I feel like it's all about like...
London-centric journalists.
I'm a London-centric journalist.
Yeah, me too. I feel like it's the specific area of London, though.
Your name's Roisin O'Connor.
Yes, and I have the most like London accent in the fucking world. Do you know how disappointed bands are when they meet me if they're from Ireland? Like, Two Door Cinema Club, I had an interview with them, and Alex stood up and was like, Roisin, it's so good to meet you. And then I started talking, and he sat down. Like, he literally sat down. I was like, the fuck's sake, you fucking fraud. So, yeah, that made me feel great.
Do you have another good award?
Me?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got another award, which is Mummager of the Year. Do you guys know the word mummager?
I know, like, a dadager is, like, the dad manager of a band, so the mummager would be the mother...
Very
manager
good.
Of a band.
Glad you were.
Bye. I'm so smart. I'm like giving myself a pat on the back for
I
that
think
one.
Mummager was first, because it's Kris Jenner. It was like supposedly the original, or like the biggest mummager around.
It was Sharon Osbourne's a bit of a mummager, because she's a bit more of a mother to Ozzy Osbourne than she is really.
God, don't say that.
Does she not mummage her own kids? Does she not mummage Jack?
Not very well.
Is mummage a verb? I'm going to say it a lot now.
Yeah.
Stop mummaging me.
Exactly. Just leave me be.
Yeah. So anyway, well, that's my award, and it goes to Dion, who is novelist's mum.
Oh, she's met her a few times. She's
amazing.
She's a
fucking legend. Yeah. Like, so I interviewed him a few months ago outside this pub, and then she turned up about halfway through, and like, you know when like the PR or whatever's in the room and you kind of want them to just stay away and not interrupt the conversation when you're on the phone or whatever, or just having a chat. So I was kind of a bit on edge, because I was like, oh, she's going to be like telling me my questions are shit or whatever. And then within like a minute, it was just me and her talking, and Novelist was just like sitting outside on another table. Like, for fuck's sake, Mum, you've done it again.
That means you've become Novelist Mum's friend, Roisin.
Like, pretty much, yep. And then he was at the Mercury's, obviously, because he got shortlisted for his amazing debut album. And I went over to say hi, and he saw me coming, but then Dion saw me as well. And she stood up and literally like pushed him out the way and was like, Roisin! So yeah, I love her. She's amazing, and she does a very good job.
The good thing about this is actually Novelist is the next podcast on this.
Like, oh!
Yeah, he's next week.
I genuinely didn't know that. That's amazing. Is his mum coming?
No, the mum's not on it.
Oh, good. Well, now I know she's free, so we can go for coffee while we're doing the podcast.
I want to give an award out to the Best Mercury Music Prize Winner Award for 2018, which can only go to Wolf Alice because they won it, and I was like proper stoked.
You think that's the best one?
That they won it. No, I'm just stoked. Well, they're the best one of the winners, so like... Do you know what I mean?
I get it, yeah.
They're the best winner.
They're the best winner, yeah.
I was incredibly stoked when they won because I put £10 on them winning when it was still 9-1.
Nice. Happy days, yeah.
Yeah. And so I was...
Just about buy you a round in London.
Yeah, well, it did. I was at Lily Allen's...
London-centric journalist.
Losing, post-Mercury losing party, celebrating with my Wolf Alice winning money. I can tell you it didn't go down very well.
Whose after party were you at?
At Lily Allen's losing party. But I think Wolf Alice ended up there because I think Wolf Alice was so...
They definitely didn't.
They said they were, but were you in the pub?
I was. There's a place called the Hawley Arms, which is in Camden, and it's like was frequented with by Amy Winehouse back in the day, and was very much
and
like
Razorlight.
One of the pubs of the 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005 kind of bohemian indie scene. I mean, that's a really nice way of putting it, isn't it? Like the Libertines and all that, but. Mm-hmm. I got in there as soon as I was there. They were all working behind the bar. Ellie served me, the lead singer from Wolf Alice, served me a pint of Guinness and charged me like $5.60 or something for it. And she, like, had to like use the card machine. And I was like, it's a damning indictment of music in 2018 that the Mercury Music Prize winners have to go back to all work at the bar straight after.
That's funny.
That's excellent. Oh, I think that's a good prize.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good prize. And Sam, have you got one?
An award or a view on Wolf Alice?
Anything? Oh yeah, let me say
that I also think that it was thoroughly deserved, and I think they're a great band. And I need to find my awards. I'm sorry, I wasn't ready. I was trying to stall for time, but I didn't do it well. Oh, I was going to do a Death of My Youth award for the closure of NME magazine. Now I know that some NME journalists get very upset on Twitter when you say that the NME closed, because they say, we've still got a website.
Yeah.
And to that I say,
it's got a lot of traffic going through it.
Be real. Okay, it's over.
You wrote for the NME, so you kind of feel like you can say this, right?
Yeah.
Do you have a grudge?
No, not at all. But I just think that, like, I've been reading Meet Me in the Bathroom, that fantastic oral history of sort of New York in the early 2000s with the Strokes and all of that kind of stuff. And like, you know, NME was such a living, breathing part of that. You can't really compare that and its status throughout history to like having a website where you write up Two Door Cinema Club tour dates with some affiliate links. But that aside, I do think that... it was really sad, and I felt quite bummed about it. And you know, it's obviously it's time. Everything has its time, and that's fine. But I think it gets quite short shrift sometimes, and everyone thinks that their sort of era was the best, and mm-hmm. everything that came after it was rubbish. But I think overall, it produced a lot of great journalists, and it created that feeling that I think is somewhat lost of like music being a bit of a soap opera with lots of characters and progression and stories, and you know that the people who are in bands are not just sort of people sitting in studios writing top lines, but they're actually sort of interesting figures who interact with each other.
It cultivated a whole like view, like world in my head when I was like buying NME every single week when I was at school. Like I started buying it maybe about 13, and OMA in Northern Ireland isn't the very first place on like the magazine delivery list. I used to get it a week out of date, so when you would get this week's one, I would get last week's one. So it was basically like I was getting people in London send me it over, go on, send it over, I'll send you over some sausages in return. But like the way I had like the world of like indie rock in my head, like, you know, like with the White Stripes, and actually around that stage it would have been the Hives and the Strokes and all like the Franz Ferdinand and Razorlight, and there's such a slew of indie bands from around that stage. Who did Generator again? I can get a Generator.
Oh, the Holloways.
The Holloways, yeah, all those bands. God. But I had this idea that like all the bands that were on, say, Domino, say like Arctic Monkeys and Franz Ferdinand, that they all hung out together, that there was like a common room and that they would all like go in and like chat to each other and they'd bitch about all the bands that were on like different labels.
But I think it very much was like that, certainly in London for a while,
yeah.
And in, and I presume in Yorkshire and Glasgow when the sort of exciting things were happening there. You know, like, I feel like that is somewhat missing a little bit. I'll always love that when there's like a bunch of bands who are mates with each other and are going out, and when you go out you see them all out getting smashed and it's kind of a good vibe. And I think that, you know, people, when people wonder why we don't have that kind of band culture anymore, I think that, that it's a lot of that is that like there's not that kind of social element to it where you can kind of see Claxons and Maccabees sitting in Efes trying to drink each other under the table or whatever it is.
Yeah, and like the bands that you do see out, like, and like I've just moved down to Brighton, but when I was still living in North London, you would see lots of bands out all the time, but the only difference was that none of them really that like successful.
Well, again, that's it. It's such a Enemy was such a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, it would take these absolute bands who had done absolutely nothing, weren't having any commercial success, and it would sort of stick them on the front cover anyway, or in at least in the pages. You know, it would put the others on the cover and all these bands. And so all these bands who were basically, by today's standards, flops. You know, you still knew who they were and all about them, and you know. And sometimes it would then turn into something in the case of a Maximo Park or a Futureheads or something, where they were sort of written about enough that they gained a fan base and became, you know, there was that kind of middle tier that you just don't have now, do you? You're either
you're either massive or you're not.
Yeah.
No, I dig, yeah, the Death of Enemy, it made me sad, but at the same time, I've still got the internet.
I've still got the website. You know, and also, when it, you know, what it became when it was a free thing, I just think if you can't make a magazine where basically every single page is like shameless branded content promotions, like we did it in association with Pilot Stationery, if you can't make that work, then what hope is there for the rest of us? If, you know, the Enemy towards the end, it reminded me, have you ever seen that 30 Rock where Jack makes a... have you seen 30 Rock? Where Alec Baldwin's character, he makes a TV show that has got so much branded content opportunities in that it's profitable even if no one's watching it.
Yeah, but like, what is the future then? Like, you guys are active.
Oh God, we went to the future of music journalism.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to open that up.
Yeah, no, but
sorry, back to the banner. Yeah.
But like honestly, like if you're trying to like do journalists give a shit about like creating scenes and creating genres the same way that they used to? Because like I know a journalist like who claims to have invented the word Britpop.
Oh, for God's sake.
But like I think every journalist has that sort of claim, but like, do people give a shit about that now?
So I mean, this is just literally just me, I'm not speaking for the entire industry.
Yes, you are.
I think just my attitude towards music is just, I think it's ridiculous to think that one person listens to one genre anymore. It just is not a thing. You know, like, even if you say you're a metal fan, you're listening to like old metal and new metal and all this kind of, like, you know, you might go into rock, you might listen to fucking 21 Pilots, I don't know. And then, so yeah, like, my thing is just, I just want to stick with bands. I don't want to write about a band, you know, write about someone once and then never write about them again. You know, I want to kind of see it through. So I think with new music, I tend to pick ones that I think I'm going to stick with these guys for a while. I guess not write about them, you know, once because they got a viral hit on YouTube. I want to stay with them because they're amazing and, you know, support them over a couple of years until hopefully they make it.
I've got like an award, but I'm going to give it to one of you two, right? Because I'm going to give you like an opportunity to try this each.
Okay.
So the describe Tekashi 6ix9ine in the easiest way possible to somebody who doesn't know who that person is.
Roisin, I'll let you go first.
Fucking dickhead, don't listen to him.
Sam, can you come up with something a little bit better than that?
Sorry.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, I sort of feel the same, that like, it's weird. I mean, the music is whatever, but I do think it's weird that like, there's been a lot of kind of progress in a lot of industries, but in music, like, he's had a complete free pass. And people don't seem particularly bothered about all the bad stuff he did. And to me, I'm just finding it, maybe I'm getting old, I just find it increasingly hard to get past that. And I mean, I know that everyone is a bastard in the end, at the end, but I just find it, I just can't sit down and listen to the music when I just know, I feel the same about X, and I feel the same about, you know, a lot of people who's, when I do hear their songs, I think are quite good. I just find it so... Is that wet with me? Should I be more into?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a, can that's I offer a, that's like a fair enough way.
A slightly more nuanced development of what I just said, which might help. But I mean, yeah. So it's, I think at the same time, like these certain artists, you know, I don't think we should be celebrating them considering like the people they are, and like it's very public knowledge of everything they've done and like what they're still doing and everything like that. But there is also like a massive degree of responsibility that isn't being taken by record labels that sign these people and the radio stations that play them and the publications that write about them, like knowing, you know, like these guys are on trial or in prison already for like really quite horrific crimes, and you're still, you know, putting money into their record and like leaking it, you know. So that's, I find that quite frustrating. And I think, you know, when you're a certain age, you kind of want to just overlook all the bad stuff because you need people to be fans of, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, well, yeah. I think if somebody has never heard of Tekashi 6ix9ine and has listened to this podcast,
I have absolutely no idea.
I don't think that they'll probably be going digging too much further, or maybe their interest has peaked a little bit more.
God,
since
maybe
that.
We've just been free promo for him again.
Who wants to go next with an award?
My last one was the most embarrassing hip hop beef of the year. Which I think there could be several contenders for this, I think. But mine's Drake and Pusha T. I do think that was horrific. I was like squirming every time something new happened.
Go on, why? I thought it was great.
It started out okay because it kind of been bubbling under the surface for a little bit, and then it flared up again at the beginning of this year.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know, it was just the story of Adidon, or not, however you say it, was great. And then Drake just kind of sank because Drake didn't come back with a proper fire response, in my opinion.
Does that, like, if you've got a beef going on with somebody, you've kind of got 24 hours, 48 hours to like reply?
I think it took a week like to come back.
But what happens if somebody starts a beef with you, right, and you're on holidays and you've promised your missus that like you're turning the phone off, there'll be no beefing while we're in Skegness, it's all about the family time,
yeah,
and then somebody drops some serious fire in your inbox and you're like, shit, right, okay, I gotta do this now.
I just think, you know, everything's different now. Nothing's like how it used to be. And I just liked...
All right,
just,
old man Sam.
No, but I just like... No, but I'm saying it's
rap
great.
Rap beefs aren't what they used to be.
No, what I'm saying, like, you know, I don't know about time limits and all of that. I just like that Pusha T put the research in. And then I liked...
That's pretty impressive detective work.
It was great.
What was the detective work?
That he revealed the fact that Drake had a child. But actually, it wasn't really detective work. I think, didn't Drake's producer tell him?
Yeah, but... In a real sort of went behind and stabbed him in the back moment.
Mm.
And then also I liked Drake midway through going like, okay, we're all having fun, but just to be clear about the time that I, you know, wore blackface, like that was whatever. So
it's just for a fashion shoot, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah, it was actually an art piece. So, you know, he did all the classic. I thought he was going to do the classic, you know, The Who, like, oh, it's just for research thing next. I mean, I just like that they all sort of... It just went in weird directions. I thought it was
there was
quite
an article
fun.
I read about it that after that beef had started, that even Drake and Pusha T's Google searches had gone up by threefold.
That's insane.
And I mean, like who Googles Drake at this point? Like, how far removed from like popular culture have you been that you have to go to your computer? Oh, Drake. Oh, he seems like a nice boy.
Sometimes you just need to get to more great Drake content. That's the quickest way.
I guess if
way.
You want to learn like all the different facets of the beef, then.
We don't all have good favourite systems. You know, I know you've got very good bookmarks, but some of us are just typing in Drake every time we want to listen to Drake.
And you say, like, I think the problem is if like half these rap beefs go over online. And I'm not saying I want guys to like start fighting each other again, but there are actually still proper rap beefs, but most of them are in France. So like Booba and Carice. Do you know those guys?
I don't know anything about this.
Okay, so they're like two of the biggest rappers in France, and they hate each other, and they accidentally ended up at the same airport.
I saw the video of this.
This massive airport brawl at Orly.
That was a really savage brawl.
You know, it's just basically this was happening around the same time as Drake and Pusha, and I'm looking at their online little spat about you've got a love child, but actually like your producer's really lame or whatever and stuff like that. And then you see these guys like nailing each other in an airport, like thousands of people around. They shut the airport down.
Yeah.
Like for 30 minutes, they had to clear everyone
out.
You know
those like really bougie watch shops that they've got at airports?
They were like throwing
these guys are beating each other over it.
Stuff at each other. I mean, I shouldn't laugh too much because it's actually like, yeah, it's actually serious. But that's what I mean when there's like, there are proper rap beefs. Like that's a rap beef. That's like Tupac and Biggie level. And when I look at Pusha and Drake, I just feel a bit embarrassed for
even
them.
Cardi B.
What you're saying is that you're extremely bloodthirsty.
Yeah.
Yeah, got it.
I mean, yeah, but like literally Cardi B and Nicki, like that was another one. I mean, I'm sad that they fight because I felt like they kind of got pushed into that so much by the media. Like everyone wanted it to happen and they kind of felt
it was like
it was a thing.
It's like when I went to an all-boys school. So right, during the second or third period, right, somebody would go over to somebody in the class and be like going, he said your mum's a dick, and then they'd go over to the other kid and it'd be like going, he said your mum's a dick.
Cardi and Nicki was
nobody said anything. So then by the time they got to lunchtime, everybody was beefing up and all the testosterone of these 14
year olds ready,
then it would be engineered by somebody else in the class that after school used to are gonna fight, and then everybody's emotions are so up that they're like, yeah, do you know what, I am gonna fight. So this whole thing is engineered.
Yeah.
And then those guys ended up becoming media.
Yep. And Cardi threw a shoe.
I know.
New award, best use of a shoe at a award show. Not award show, a fashion show.
Yeah, I think.
Can we give an award to all of Cardi B's awards? All her award show performances have been so incredible.
I love her.
I feel like she sort of won that beef by being great.
Well, it's just that photo of her coming out of the ceremony with like this massive lump on her face.
Yeah.
And she just had her head held completely high and she was just, you know.
But I just feel like she's backed it up, whereas like Nicki's done a bunch of rubbish songs and like it's all fallen a bit flat, even though it is very funny when she's on her Beats One show dropping all the bombs. Although, do you know that? So Nicki Minaj has a Beats One show.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Where she drops a lot of bombs. But I guess like if you're used to hearing Westwood or whatever, you're used to bombs being dropped.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet when she did it, everyone was like, oh my God, she's dropping bombs all the way through. Am I right about that? I found it really weird. Like on Twitter, everyone was freaking out because she kept playing like, which you're like so used to hearing.
Where did you get those sound effects from?
Yeah.
I didn't know that this year was as...
I know, we haven't even talked about Kanye.
Oh my God,
hour.
No, I need to leave.
We'll just leave it, we don't need to.
Like this year's been crazy in music.
It has.
The last award of Slacker 2018's End of Year Awards goes to, this year was so shit crazy that we don't even have to talk about Kanye West Award.
Mm. That's a good award.
Guys, thank you so much for giving these great awards out. They will be doled out in physical form to all of the people that have won those awards.
I'd rather not give.
What you're
going to
give them? You're going to send letters?
Oh yeah, we're gonna get them made up.
You don't get that on the New York Times podcast, do you?
No, big time. These are properly given out, and the thing is, because you've given them out, we've got all of the people right here, right now that you have to look directly in the eye after speaking to. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time out to do these awards, and if we don't get like a load of one-star reviews or ratings or whatever, we might do it again.
Nice one.
Great. I'll see you then. I'm going to put it in my GCal now, so.
Sick. Okay. Right. Great. Yeah, sounds good.